Zeus. Surveying, fires, that's caught. Randall Cobb into Chicago territory. Randall Cobb is going to score. 75 yards, that is crazy. 100 years of Green Bay Packer football. It's the largest fourth quarter deficit they have ever overcome. 17 points in the fourth. Stunning. Just stunning.
You've played in some big games, Aaron. How do you put this one into words?
Yeah, it's hard to. It is. But it's the Bear-Packer rivalry. So it would have had to take something really catastrophic injury-wise to keep me off the field in the second half. You know, I went in the locker room, did all the tests. And then I was in our indoor facility trying to get it loosened up. But I knew once I got back on the field, adrenaline started going, I'd be able to hang in there.
What was the injury?
Well, my knee. You know, I just felt something in it. I was having a hard time putting weight on it. Doc and I had a conversation there. You know, we did the test. I told him I was going back.
Very rarely will you hear somebody sound so ecstatic about a knee injury, but that was Aaron Rodgers after completing that comeback for the Green Bay Packers over the Chicago Bears on the opening Sunday of the NFL season. To look back on the opening weekend with us is John Gonzalez of TheRinger.com. Pleasure to speak to you again, John. The Aaron Rodgers comeback, it was likened by Mike Carlson on OTBAM this morning as akin to The Undertaker coming back out and rising from the dead. And I don't think he's too far wrong with that assertion.
No, that's a good one. I didn't expect him to come back. Like you said, he sounded really excited about his knee injury, and I thought that was going to be it for him for the night, but it wasn't. And the poor Chicago Bears, man, it was right there for them, and it feels like this something like this always happens to them.
Yeah, I mean, to put it into context, they were 17-0 ahead at halftime. Like, you're looking at this, Matt Rodgers is on the sideline, the Bears are 17-0 in the ascendancy. This is fait accompli. This is going to be an opening day win for the Bears, and the Packers are going to have to regroup and kind of go again, building from week two. They missed out last year because of Aaron Rodgers' prolonged absence, also through injury. But it's just, to try and contextualize this, it's just bizarre to see the game completely spun on its head and on its axis by the one guy's return.
Yeah, and you know what? The Bears had it. Khalil Mack looked amazing. Everybody was making John Gruden jokes. Laughing about John Gruden trading away Khalil Mack, who had single-handedly, it seemed for a while, put the game into control for the Chicago Bears. And for Chicago to start out that hot on the road at their rival Green Bay, where it looked like, hey, all of a sudden this division would be flipped upside down, and then to lose it, and to lose it in spectacular fashion to a guy who seemed like he would be out because of a knee injury, it was a dramatic game. It was a fantastic game. And really, that's the kind of game, if you're the Bears, where it might take you a little bit to recover.
Yeah, understandably, they're going to suffer a major, I suppose, confidence rebuild they're going to need from that point on. But just guide us through the Rodgers injury. Obviously, we know he suffered with injury in the past. What was the nature of last night and what forced him off?
Well, he went down with a knee injury, it looked like, and they took him off, and it looked like he would be out for a little while, and DeShone Kizer came in, and I think Cleveland Browns fans were sort of chuckling about that. DeShone Kizer, not exactly a fantastic backup quarterback. The first couple of plays, it looked like DeShone Kizer might be okay, and then all of a sudden, we were all reminded that he's DeShone Kizer and had been jettisoned from Cleveland for a reason, and that's the kind of thing with the Green Bay Packers where you go, oh, well, we've got a lot of really good position players, skill position players on the offensive side of the ball. We could have a really good year this year. And then you're reminded that your team is only as good as Aaron Rodgers' health. So for Aaron Rodgers to come back, it was a big deal, obviously, for the Packers, not just in that game, but for the whole season, because without him, they're lost.
Clearly, you can hear him in that post-match interview. He's buzzed on adrenaline. Like, they've just completed that comeback. Yeah. He himself has obviously played a key role in that. The worrying aspect of it will be for the Packers is, how okay is he going to be next weekend? Because you would imagine he was nursing that knee throughout the time that he did come back on. I mean, that was quite obvious. And it was almost more miraculous that he was doing it essentially off balance throughout the course of that second half. But the worry is he facing any kind of spell out from this? There has to be some kind of repercussion. You'd imagine it's not just going to be a miraculous recovery and everything's going to be hunky-dory from here on in.
Yeah, you wonder, you know, obviously how serious the injury was. He was able to come back, but like you said, he was hobbling. There were moments when he was trying to roll outside of the pocket and he couldn't because obviously his leg was bothering him. So, yeah, this is something that he and the Packers are going to have to monitor and worry about and think about for next week and as the season continues. Because really, I mean, and we've known this for as long as Aaron Rodgers has been the quarterback of the Packers. If he's healthy, then all of a sudden they're one of the best teams in the NFC. And if he's not healthy, then they're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what would be their NFC prospects with or without Rodgers? They look an okay outfit, you know, without him. It's just they're not good enough, you would presume, without an Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's a reason why he's paid the amount of money he is, and that's quite clear and is quite evident from yesterday's display. But without him, as we saw last season, they are a bit of a worry and a bit of a liability without him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, without him, all of a sudden, like I said, I was watching that game last night and sort of marveling at the Chicago Bears being able to go up with Aaron Rodgers healthy and on the field before he had been hurt. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I actually do like the Green Bay Packers and their skill position players. They've got a nice complement of wide receivers with Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb. And they've got an assortment of running backs that I kind of like. And they added Jimmy Graham. And then I thought, okay, you know, maybe they could do something in the NFC this year. And then once again, you're just reminded that without Aaron Rodgers, they've got no chance whatsoever. With Aaron Rodgers, all of a sudden they're in the mix.
Yeah, and a lot will depend, I suppose, on how much he comes through next weekend, because it's a trick he can only pull off once. I mean, the Browns see him come back on. They're like, oh, grand, maybe we can cope with him. We managed to do it in the opening overs of that game. But like, everybody's going to be targeting him from this point on, or trying to catch him off balance, trying to catch him off guard. And you know, he's open to sacks from that point on.
Yeah, I mean, if his knee is bothering him and if he isn't mobile, and one of the things that makes Aaron Rodgers so great is that I think sometimes we forget that he is a pretty mobile quarterback. He's really good throwing on the move. He's great when he rolls outside of the pocket. So if you're another team, you're going to want to put him on the move. Mm. Get him moving, get him out of the pocket and see if he can sustain it and if his knee will hold up.
I want to talk about the Cleveland Browns for a moment, because they managed to end their losing streak. There were 17 games without a win. They've finally ended it, but yeah, they're still waiting on that win.
Still waiting. This actually, you know, marks improvement for them to not start off with a loss. Believe it or not, this is their best start since 2004. They've basically started every season since 2004 with a loss or a tie. So for them not to lose to Pittsburgh, it looked like they were going to early on in that game just sort of fall apart, as Cleveland tends to do. I think in the preseason with HBO and with Hard Knocks, the Browns had convinced a lot of people that this year would be different. Maybe it still will be, but this definitely ends up as they tied, but that's a win for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, considering how traditionally strong the Steelers usually are, I mean, that is a solid result for any other team, you guess.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, like, whenever you're playing, when you're the Cleveland Browns and you're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, generally that's an automatic loss. So for them to come out with a tie in overtime to Ben Roethlisberger, yes, they didn't have Le'Veon Bell, but James Conner looked really good in that game. They still have Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. So, yeah, I mean, this is a step in the right direction at the very least for the Cleveland Browns.
You're an Eagles man, right?
I am indeed.
Why is it people seem to be underwhelmed by Thursday's opening game and that win over the Falcons?
They didn't look great. Nick Foles didn't look particularly good. Took Jay Ajayi a second to get moving. I would caution everybody that it was the first game of the season. They've got a lot of injuries. Alshon Jeffrey wasn't out there. Again, Jay Ajayi wasn't really fully healthy. They had some injuries to the offensive line. I still think that they're the heavy favorite in the NFC East. They're one of the favorites along with the Rams, and you could throw a handful of other teams in there in the NFC. But, you know, they're going to get Carson Wentz back, and then all of a sudden, then you can really judge them. But, yeah, it wasn't a spectacular game for them, but they still did win the game. So I think that's a good, you know, mark in their favor.
Do we have a timeline on when Wentz is due back?
No, we don't. That's been a point of consternation, I think, in Philadelphia, especially with the media, that Doug Peterson hasn't revealed what exactly is going on with Carson Wentz and what the timetable might be. And I think that frustrates him a little bit, because he's asked about it ad nauseum. So it's one of those situations where you hope that Nick Foles As long as he's out there, we'll continue to improve and help the team. But Foles tends to be a pretty slow starter.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with
that. It's something that we usually talk about. I mean, we mentioned earlier on in our show here, there's a player in rugby, Conor Murray, and it's a usual thing with rugby players that maybe their medical updates are a bit slow and forthcoming because they're slightly more serious than anybody wants to let on. Is there a fear on that front, on the Wentz front?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be. He's the franchise quarterback. Nick Foles obviously played great in the Super Bowl and helped them win a championship, their first ever, and it was fantastic. But he's also a guy who had previously been cut by the Rams, who had been traded by the team that ended up taking him back in the Philadelphia Eagles. He thought about retiring for a while. I like Nick Foles just fine as backup quarterbacks go, but it's clearly Carson Wentz's team. And the reason why they were in such a good position last year and ended up as the number one overall seed was because Carson Wentz played so well. And I think we quickly forget that he was an MVP candidate before he went down. So he did get hurt in December. It was a late season injury. It's one of those things where who knows how long it'll take him to get back, but also you don't want to rush him because in the same way that the Green Bay Packers really need Aaron Rodgers, the Philadelphia Eagles really need Carson Wentz.
Yeah, absolutely. The last thing we need is him getting a recurrence of that injury as soon as he comes back. We have to talk about the protests because this was always going to be a focus coming into the first weekend of the season. What was the percentage of kneels? What was the percentage of absences for the national anthem? We knew coming into this that there would be more. Has it been more pronounced this time around? Have the absences been more pronounced? Give us a sense of the general feeling around the anthem and its playing at the moment.
Yeah, a couple of guys from the Dolphins kneeled on the sideline yesterday, and that game was delayed by a big lightning storm, but they kneeled before the game began. I don't know that it was more pronounced, if there were more absences. I think it's just sort of this thing that's persistent now within the NFL, where you've got some guys who have decided to stay behind in the locker room rather than kneel or raise a fist, or that's been their form of protest. But the NFL, it's a situation now where they seem really lost in how to adjudicate this, in how they want to handle it, if they want it to just go unregulated, or if they do want to go out there and end up penalizing people. It seems like they have reversed course on their preseason decision to fine teams. It's a really messy situation. I personally would like players to be able to voice their protest or demonstrate their protest and however they see fit. I think it's a positive and healthy thing for the country and for the league. The owners obviously think differently, but the way that the league has handled it has been really sloppy.
They put out a statement, I think, a couple of days before the start of the season saying that they wanted to be an organization that listened better and to take these things on board, that they weren't necessarily going to throw around punishments willy-nilly. How much of that was informed by the Kaepernick situation in not necessarily the Nike ad, but more so with his case about collusion was given another green light to go a step further in the courts? They seem to be, I think, slightly unnerved by that, it would seem to me, rather than a massive ad campaign and a boost in sales for a certain shoe manufacturer.
Yeah, who knows what motivates the league office? It really seems to be their position seems to be extremely capricious, where on any given day, anything could really inform their position. It could be that court case. It could be the Nike ad. It could be the president tweeting something stupid. It could be pushback from fans who are conservative and on the right-leaning side of politics. It could be any number of things. From any day, you have really no idea what the league's position is on this. And part of it is, you know, they're trying to serve two camps, right? They're trying to serve progressives and liberals who like football and think that this is a healthy thing, that demonstrating and voicing their distaste and displeasure with police brutality and social inequality and social injustice is a healthy thing. And then the opposite side, people who don't like that and think that it's somehow an affront to America and the troops and citizenship. I think the NFL is trying to have it both ways, and by doing so, they're having it no way.
One of the flags that Trump throws up is the declining viewership, but that's something that any sport at the moment particularly shouldn't get that spooked by, because across the board, as far as I can make out, I think every sport, every form of entertainment is slightly worried about a fall in active current viewing, but people are now finding other ways to view things. The old model of watching on a certain network at a certain time isn't necessarily all that it used to be given the various platforms. So Is the league slightly worried about viewership figures? Are networks slightly worried about how the viewership figures are going? Or is there an acceptance that, yeah, we get it, people are kind of watching these things online or watching, finding different ways to watch them?
Yeah, I think that the league probably is worried about viewership numbers, as all leagues are worried. But as you mentioned, there are any number of mitigating factors for that. It's such a complex equation that to point to one thing, like, for example, protests pregame, and say that's the reason why viewership is in decline, is really specious reasoning. And we've learned that a lot with the president, that he'll like seize on one thing, and even if it's not rooted in fact, and often it is not, he'll try to, you know, elevate it as the main reason why, you know, X thing is happening because of Y cause. But it's such a complicated thing that you can't, with football viewership, you can't point to it and say this is the reason why, or there's any single reason why. I think there are any number of reasons.
It's a shame, really, because as we've seen from this opening week, it's a hell of an entertaining product. And I think the league, to a degree, is in pretty fine health.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to have football back. I think that
you've got a direction in your life again, John.
Something to do on a Sunday aside from hang out with the dogs. Yeah, no, I forget sometimes that I really do like football until football is back.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I say, oh, right, you know, and the NBA for me is still my primary sport. I like basketball the best. When the NBA rolls back around in about a month's time now, I'll dedicate most of my time to that. However, there's something about Sundays and Sunday football and the communal aspect where you're watching it with your friends, you're engaging with people on social media. It is sort of a unifying factor in America and I think globally for people who like football.
Why does it have that hold that other sports maybe don't?
I think part of it is the fact that it is a three-day-a-week, but primarily a Sunday endeavor.
Yeah.
Yes, we have Thursday night football. Yes, we'll have Monday night football. But there's something about Sunday. It's one game a week. Your team is on. You're going to plop yourself down in front of the television or in front of your computer, and you're going to order food with your friends. And there's like this communal gathering aspect to it. It's a little tribal, and I think that people gravitate towards that.
You've mentioned food far too often, and you've now made me hungry, so I'm going to have to wrap this up. John Gonzalez of TheRinger.com, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us today.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.